Hi there. We're so glad you found the Fabric Podcast. Before you start listening, we wanted to let you know that this is one of our earlier episodes where our show was called The Check-In. On these episodes, we talk about the company, giving you insight into who we are and what we do. But in 2019, we realized we really want to focus more on company culture. So we refocused and renamed the podcast. So just a heads up that this earlier episode is still us, the team from The Receptionist, but just with a different show name and a slightly different focus. Thanks for listening. On this episode of The Check-In, we are joined by President and CEO Andy Alsop. He's here to give us an insider's look into the company culture that exists at The Receptionist. He and the people he works with have worked really hard to come up with core values that embody not only what they value, but that everyone there really lives out and supports. And that's not easy, but they've done it, and he wants to share everything that has gone into that with you. We also talk about person nearest the door syndrome, which is not part of the receptionist company culture. And in fact, their product helps to eradicate PND. I know you want to hear about it. If you're not familiar, you want to know the signs and symptoms to look for and how you can deal with it. So stick around. We are back on The Check-In with President and CEO of The Receptionist, Andy Alsop. How are you doing, Andy?
Doing great, Sarah. Thanks again.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. All right. So we talked on a previous episode, Michael and I, about radical customer support and the culture that you are creating at The Receptionist. And one of the things that I just thought was so interesting is that you, as the president and CEO, you get on customer service calls when needed. So before we get into that, can you just talk to us a little bit about the culture that you really have worked so hard to develop at The Receptionist?
Sure. This is something I love to talk about. One of the goals I've had and sort of dreams I've had is to own a company where every candidate that applies for the position really wants to be in that position. And any employee that becomes an employee always wants to stay an employee. And that has been something that I've really tried to work very hard on with myself, with my leadership team. And it's taken a lot of work to be able to get there. You really have to be very intentional about your culture. We focused on really developing our core values, and that really came out of the book Traction by Gino Wickman, and it's called Traction, Getting a Grip on Your Business. And one of the most important parts that they have you focus on as the first exercise in developing what's called the Vision Traction Organizer is to develop your core values. And we organically actually came up with our core values, and it turned out to spell the word fabric. And that stands for fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. And we really live those core values, and they're something that we use on a daily basis as we're operating the company.
Yeah, and that sounds amazing from a customer standpoint as well as an employee standpoint at your company, because I think we can all think of times where we have worked for companies where none of that fabric exists. Mm-hmm. It's not fun. You don't feel respected. It's not collaborative. And that's not a good environment to be in from the worker's perspective, but typically then for a customer's perspective as well.
That's so true.
You can tell when people are not enjoying what they're doing, when they're not feeling good about themselves or their job. It's not a good experience for anybody.
And you can find that in the customer experience. You know, what's funny about it is we have so much fun that you'll even see it in a chat. If you come into a chat, you're going to see some funny GIFs in there. There was one recent chat where at the end, they said, you guys are the best company. We're definitely going with you because you're a lot of fun to work with.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and that's what you get when you come to work with us. We're not scripted. The worst is when you go into a chat and it's like, give me your name, do me this, and all
word
you
checks.
Know, yeah, exactly. And it's just the same thing over and over again. And you just feel like, wow, is there really even a human being on the other side? Whereas it's about authenticity. We're authentic with our customers. And they really like that. They really like to know, I'm going to get an experience when I go through the chat system or a phone or whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking with Michael on a previous episode about how with your radical customer support, you also follow up and you make it a good experience for your customer. And so I admitted to him, I'm often that angry customer on the phone because I'm so mad that the thing I need to happen is not happening. And your team, I'm sure, would calm me down. They would follow up. They'd make sure I was okay. They'd treat me like a person. I'd be so disarmed by it all that, you know, it would be fantastic for everybody. So, you know, that's so important for the customers that you're trying to reach And then also that's a much better experience for the person giving the customer service and, you know, the person who's working for the company. It's just better all around. So I think that's awesome. Any other examples that you could share about how you not create the fabric, but how you live out that fabric in your office environment?
Well, I mean, it definitely comes down to when we start company meetings and we are talking about what we're doing, we're always reminding ourselves about fabric. We are eventually going to have like a mural put on the wall, and a lot of companies do that, you know, and it can be a little cliche, but at the same time, it's something that reminds everybody what that is. But what I love the most is that you hear conversations throughout the company where somebody will be quoting some core value from fabric. And they'll say, well, we need to be authentic, or let's be collaborative around it, or whatever else it is. That's the point at which you know that the culture and your core values are really being practiced. And there'll be times, too, where they'll be like, well, does that really meet our core values? Maybe we're working on, I don't know, a partner relationship and saying to ourselves, does that partner meet, do they live our core values as well? Because we always want to be working with individuals in the company, contractors, partners, those that really share our core values. So we share our core values with pretty much everybody that we work with because we want them to know what's important to us as a company. And we share it with people who are applying for positions. It's actually on our careers page in big letters across it so that as people are researching, is this the kind of company I want to work with? They can see those core values. And if it doesn't speak to them, then they probably move on to the next position. But we do have a lot of candidates who will come in and say, I took a look at your core values. I took a look at your careers page. And this really speaks to me. It's almost as if this job description was written for me. Those are the people who are going to be contributors to the company and are going to be on board and are going to help continue to perpetuate fabric throughout the company as we grow.
Yeah, I love that because I think for companies, it's I don't want to say easy, but it's easy-ish to create, you know, our values or our mission statement, whatever it is. It's easy to do that, but it's not always easy to then live that out or to have everyone sort of be in agreeance with what that is. So I think that's fantastic that you don't just have it out there, but you really live by it. And it helps to inform the decisions that you're making. I mean, that's really where values become so helpful because you do have something to return to in the event that you have to make decisions about things. So,
well, there's interesting. Just one other topic that I found so interesting was there's a group that in Denver, it's a national group, but they have a chapter in Denver for the culture ambassadors, they called it. And so one of the leader of the Denver community who we know said, would you do a talk for us at industry, the co-working space we're in Denver? And I said, of course, we'll do it. Two of the members of my leadership team were going to make it. Both of them had circumstances that came up at the last minute and they couldn't make it. And so I asked two of my team members that morning, like 15 minutes before it actually started, I said, would you just get up there and talk about like what you believe our culture is? And it was really, I don't know, it was really inspiring to hear what they said because they both recited experiences just like you talked about where in the past, there was sort of forced culture where they had some sort of acronym and it meant something. But when you left a meeting where they were rah-rah about it, everybody would be like, "That nobody lives that. That's not really our culture. It's just our stated culture. Or here's our mission statement. Let's all get behind it." And they both basically said this was the first experience they had where they really felt like the culture was being lived throughout the company. And it wasn't just me talking about it, but that everybody at every level of the company is also living it as well and living those core values. So that was really, I think it was neat to see it in practice.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned that sort of this evolved and it came out organically. Can you just speak to that a little bit? Because I've been through setting up mission statements with people and a lot of times it's like this session or two and you create it and it's done. And I think that's part of what leads to people not being supportive, not living it out because it was like a task that we had to get done and then we did it and here it is, but it doesn't really embody us. So for anyone who's inspired by this culture that you've created, how might they come to sort of their values organically like you did?
Well, as I talked about, there is Traction. Traction is a book and it's Traction, Getting a Grip on Your Business. And it's written by a guy named Gino Wickman. I highly recommend it. because it was interesting because prior to that, we had put together the mission and the values and what our value statement and our vision statement and all these things. And we put it in a Google Doc, and it sat in a Google Doc. And pretty much what I had said at one point, I was driving for one of my many trips. And during that trip, I was thinking to myself, if I asked two people from the company to describe what our culture was, what our vision was, what our values were, I would get two answers. And as many people as I asked, I would get as many different answers to what we were actually doing. And it kind of was painful to me because I felt as though I didn't have the whole company going in the same direction. And then so another business associate of mine had said, have you looked at Traction? I said, no. And I drive a lot, so I listened to it on tape. And the first exercise that you do when you're going through what's called the Vision Traction Organizer, the VTO, is to determine what are your core values. So what we ended up doing when as a leadership team, we began to adopt Traction and we began to implement it, we ended up looking back at our old vision statement, our mission, our core values, and at that time we just called it our values. And they're a little bit of a jumble. And it forced us to say, take 2-5 hours, whatever it takes, to go and try to figure out what really are your core values. So we spent a long time as a leadership team just doing that over multiple meetings. And then we came down to, we had everything. I can't remember which one. There was one letter. We had Fabric, but it was missing a whatever. And we switched it. And we needed to switch it because there was another one that wasn't being represented. So we switched it. We were like, wow, that organically happened. Fabric is actually what we had. So then we said, now it's time to take it to the team and say, after all this work, what do you think? So we introduced one core value after another, and we had a discussion about each one of them. And we wanted to make sure that each member of the team felt as though it really spoke to who we were genuinely, authentically. And so after that meeting, it turned out really well. Everybody felt like, yeah, this is something I can live by. And we know it's Fabric, so it's mentioned as an acronym constantly throughout the company. So it's been adopted, and I think it's that structure that we got from Traction that allowed us to do that. Traction gives you a whole bunch of other things as well, but it really was that first part, which is to focus on your core values and put them all together and make sure that you've intentionally have something that everybody can get on board with. And that's what made the difference, because previously, with our old core values, I could have gone up to somebody and said, what's one of our core values? And I'm pretty sure nobody would have been able to answer that question. So now everybody knows what it is.
That's great. And part of what I like is that, you know, obviously as a company, this is your culture and you're living it out, but it does get extended to your customers and the way that you go about doing business. And I think even the problems that you're helping people solve through the receptionist. And so, you know, I know part of maybe not your culture, because like we talked about, you work in a co-working space. So this next mm-hmm. sort of challenge we're going to talk about doesn't really happen for your company, but this person nearest the door syndrome, PND, we mm-hmm. wanted to just kind of chat about today, because when I heard about it, I was like, oh, this is just so real for people. And I think that if your company worked in a more traditional office space, this wouldn't be part of your culture because you would mm-hmm. deal with it. So talk to us a little bit about what is PND, person nearest the door syndrome.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing, just going back to where we are. So we are in industry. There's actually two large industry buildings in Denver that are just really cool co-working spaces. I love them. And they actually use it. They have 4 facilities total, and they use our software. So our software is actually solving the problem for ourselves and all the 750 people who are in the building as well. So it can solve it at pretty great scale as well. But person nearest the door, everybody's probably been through this. You end up walking into an office. There's no receptionist there. There might be a reception desk. And you're there to meet with Bob. And you've got a meeting with Bob, and it's in 3 minutes, and you don't want to be late. So you're saying to yourself, what do I do? And you look around, and you don't see, there's no receptionist. And all you see are maybe some closed doors. So you go around, and you go to the person nearest the door, and you knock on it. And what happens to that person? That person has to stop what they're doing. There is the context switching that happens, where all of a sudden, if you were just focused on a project and you were deep in the project, and all of a sudden somebody knocks on the door, you stop, you lose your train of thought, you answer the door, yes, can I help you? Oh, I'm looking for Bob. Oh, okay, Bob, let me see if I can go find him. Hold on a second. I'll go get him. Hold on a second. And then that person all day long is being completely interrupted constantly. Yeah. And you got that context switching. You sit back down at your desk, you go, man, where was I? Oh. And so now you've got to get back into what you're doing.
Right.
So it really impedes the productivity of the person who's closest to the door if you don't have somebody there. It also even happens when you do have a receptionist, because the receptionist may need to go to the bathroom or might need to go file something or go pick something up.
She went to find Bob.
Exactly. She went to find Bob.
Bob was not at his desk, so she has to go find him.
Visitor two comes looking in for Jim, but she's looking for Bob. So, you know, that's the hard part. That's the real challenge in the person nearest the door syndrome. And for us, it is one of the many use cases. It is, to speak to a previous episode, it's a job that people hire our software to do. And that is to alleviate the interruptions that come from the PND syndrome.
Right. Because you talked about the lack of productivity or the interruption of productivity. But, you know, again, I always imagine myself in these scenarios. So as the person sitting there trying to work, I would also be frustrated. I would be annoyed. Like, I'm just trying to work here. Can I please get this done? So, you know, it's not just the productivity piece. It's that frustration. It's, you know, going back to your fabric. That's not fun. That's not enjoyable. That doesn't feel respectful when my day continues to get interrupted. So I think the fact that, you know, your product is helping sort of live those values out in other companies is great too. One of the things that I could see happening, you and I kind of talked about this before, is that the person in charge of sort of the decision making, the one who could eradicate that PND, may not always be aware, right? If the CEO, I'm going to say it's Julie, let's make her a woman CEO. She's sitting in the back office. She might not realize that Bob is being searched for, or Jim is being searched for, and that, you know, Stephen up front is getting interrupted a couple times a day. As a CEO, how do you become aware that this is happening?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we found, just to, as a kind of sidelight, I guess, is that we have solved this for a lot of people. So customers will call us and say, here is the problem we're having. We say, well, that's actually, we've named it PND syndrome. And we describe it and they say, oh man, that's great. And then we'll have a follow-up call with them and say, how did it do? Mm-hmm. Almost every time they say it solved the problem, 100%. As that CEO, and how does she know that how to recognize this? Once you know what PND syndrome is, walk into your reception area and act as though you're there to see somebody. And what would you do? Mm-hmm. What would you do? You see a bunch of closed doors. You see an empty reception desk. It doesn't have any signage on it. And there's not even technology like an iPad. There might be a logbook, but I don't know if I should fill out the logbook and then maybe go find somebody. If that is what the visitor experience is when they walk into the lobby, probably you've got PND.
Yeah.
Because if you can't find somebody who can help you as a visitor, you're going to find somebody. I mean, you talked with Michael, and our director of marketing, in a previous conversation as well. And I've talked to him, and he said what he became so passionate about when he started interviewing for this position was that he traveled a lot. And he would go into office after office where it was the same thing. Nobody was there. He'd have to knock on the door. He'd have to figure out how, you know, and it was just a terrible experience. And so he thought, this is a solution to a problem. It's a real problem that exists. So.
Well, and you also mentioned that, you know, places that have receptionists, they might think, well, we're covered. We don't have PND. But like you said, it can happen there as well, because bathroom breaks, lunch breaks, searching for someone, accepting a delivery, stocking, you know, the fridge, or figuring out what's going on with the copier. There's all sorts of reasons why the receptionist can still be a great fit. And I think that might be a concern of people, of maybe not a concern, but like, we don't need it, right? Because we have that traditional front desk person. But can you just speak to how the receptionist sort of complements the front desk if you have sort of the traditional person there checking people in or greeting people?
Absolutely. And this, again, like I talked about in a previous episode, I visit a lot of different customers. And I would say maybe 50, 60% of our sales are to companies that already have a receptionist. But the problem is, if you have a receptionist, and let's say that receptionist needs to, as you said, go pick up a package or whatever, and he isn't at the front desk, what do you have to do? You have to fill in for that person. So what inevitably ends up happening is he has to go to somebody who also is behind a closed door, is trying to get stuff done, and say, hey, I got to run out for a package. Can you cover the front desk for me? That person is now getting interrupted. So where we find that the receptionist, the software, can be very complimentary to the receptionist, who's a human being, mm-hmm. is to be able to cover those times when they're not at the desk. And as I go and I visit customers, they say that all the time, because I talk to the receptionist and ask them, how has it helped you? And they'll say, it's been a lifesaver, because now if I go to the bathroom, I don't have to go and find somebody to cover the front desk. We now have the application here. And not only that, I can give a much better experience. If I have three people lined up and they need to be checked in and find who they're there to meet, instead of me having to pick up the phone, give them the visitor logbook, write out a name badge, I can say, could you please check in on the iPad? Oh, and by the way, can I get you some coffee or water? Or can I hang your coat up? And the process, the mundane process of checking in visitors and having notifications go to the employees is done by the software.
Right. And that's a great point, because people don't just come in one person at a time. And then there's, you know, then they're handled and then the next person comes in. Chances are there's multiple people who need assistance. And so having the receptionist, the software, can really complement what the receptionist, the individual, is doing. And then if Right. you don't have the receptionist, the person, you definitely want to think about having the receptionist, the visitor management system, to help create your own office culture that is inviting, that sets someone up for a good experience right when they walk in the door, and really does help your employees stay productive, stay focused, and enjoy what they're doing.
Exactly. And even just one other point is that almost always when I talk to them, they say that almost everybody, when they're finished checking in, said, that was really cool. You know, so that it also now they have a good experience and they have an impression of the company as being technology forward, adopting technology to help be more efficient and things like that. So,
yeah,
positive experience all around.
Absolutely. Well, we wouldn't expect anything less from a company whose values are Fabric, and that you would want to make sure that people using your system have a really great experience. So thank you so much for joining us. Before we wrap up, anything else you'd like to share with us today?
No, I think that's it. I think it's been a great discussion. I love talking about values and talking about our culture and talking about how customers are using it. So this has been great. Thanks very much, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you. We hope that you got some good insight into happiness, what we've got going on to ensure that our team and our clients are happy, and maybe what you would like to do to increase the satisfaction or measure that satisfaction for your own clients and customers. And if you'd like to check out our 2-week free trial with no credit card required, and to see what we do to make our potential customers and then customers happy, check us out at thereceptionist.com.